Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Melanie C. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, October 18th, 2018, and this is a 10 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study meeting. And today we are studying out of the Big Book. We're in the chapter to employers. We're on page 141 today, starting with paragraph 2, but there are so many men who want to stop, reading through five paragraphs that end on page 142, bottom of the second paragraph, which will be satisfied, he is not deceiving himself or you. Today's readers are the 12 steps, Marissa E., the 12 traditions, Libby E., reading the text today in support, Christine M., Pia S., and Sherry KB. The share ID number for yesterday's Thursday, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 12056, 12,056, and that'll be for Wednesday, October 17th, 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And then this morning, 7 a.m. Thursday, October 18th, 2018, share ID number 12059, 12,059. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Marissa E. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning, Melanie. Good morning, fellows. This is Marissa E., a recovering compulsive overeater calling from near Los Angeles. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me do service.
Thank you, Marissa E. I will now ask Libby E. to read the 12 traditions.
Thanks, Melanie. Could you hear me?
I can.
Okay. Libby E., recovered compulsive eater in New York. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except the matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Libby E. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. That would be by pressing star 1, not your personal mute. So today we resume our study of the Big Book in the chapter 2, Employers. We're on page 141, starting with paragraph 2. But there are many men who want to stop, reading through 5 paragraphs today, which will be on page 142, with be satisfied, he is not deceiving himself or you. And I will ask Christine M. to begin opening up our study today by reading those paragraphs and commenting. Good morning, Christine. Christine, perhaps you would like to unmute your phone.
Oh, yes, Mel. Sorry about that. This is Christine M., recovered compulsive overeater from Missouri. But there are many men who want to stop, and with them you can go far. Your understanding treatment of their cases will pay dividends. Perhaps you have such a man in mind. He wants to quit drinking and you want to help him, even if it be only a matter of good business. You now know more about alcoholism. You can see that he is mentally and physically sick. You are willing to overlook his past performances. Suppose an approach is made something like this. State that you know about his drinking and that it must stop. You might say you appreciate his abilities, would like to keep him, but cannot if he continues to drink. A firm attitude at this point has helped many of us. Next, he can be assured that you do not intend to lecture, moralize, or condemn. That if this was done formally, it was because of misunderstanding. If possible, express a lack of hard feeling toward him. At this point, it might be well to explain alcoholism, the illness. Say that you believe he is gravely ill person. With this qualification, being perhaps fatally ill, does he want to get well? You ask because many alcoholics, being warped and drugged, do not want to quit. But does he? Will he take every necessary step, submitting to anything to get well, to stop drinking forever? If he says yes, does he really mean it? Or down inside, does he think he is fooling you and that after rest and treatment, he will be able to get away with a few drinks now and then. We believe a man should be thoroughly probed on these points. Be satisfied that he is not deceiving you, not deceiving himself or you. Yes, so grateful to be here this morning and to read these paragraphs. This chapter is just so amazing, you know, and think of how I just think of how many lives could be changed and be saved if more employers knew of alcoholism and they offered this opportunity to employees who may not know anything about recovery, about AA, about the Big Book. And, you know, this reminds me when it talks about, it's ask him, or, if he's ready to stop, and be firm about it. And in this, somewhere in this chapter, it talks about, that may just be the jolt that he needs, to lose his job. Oh, that was the paragraph before, I see. But sometimes that's what it takes, and I am just really grateful that, some people do have this opportunity, it talks about that, he now understands alcoholism, so he can explain it to his employee, and it talks about that if he, acted, harshly before, it's because he just didn't understand, and that's the big thing, is that a lot of people just don't understand, that this is a disease and we have, an allergy of the body and obsession of the mind. And to have an opportunity to not only keep their job, but to live a completely different life is just amazing to me, and I can also relate this to my personal life as well, and this makes me think of working with others when it talks about, ask him if he wants to stop for good, and ask him if he's willing to go to any lengths to do so. And, if he is, that's great, if not, then, it's better to know at the beginning and let him go, than to keep him on and enable. So, I think that's what I got for this, and I'm grateful this is here, and that's what I have. Thank you so much for letting me be of service.
Thank you so much, Christine M. So we are on page 141, paragraph 2, reading through 5 paragraphs today, and it's now open for others to comment on those 5 paragraphs. Who is interested in sharing their experience?
Donna,
yeah, Jan B. Florida.
I have Donna,
Julie
and
E-B.
I have Jan B, and I have Julie E.B.
Pia S. in Florida.
Hi, Pia.
Liz T.
Ida.
Liz T. and Ida. I think that'll do it. So I have Donna B, Jan B, Julie E.B., Pia S., Liz T., and that's Ida A., right? Okay, great. Good morning, Donna. Welcome to the line.
Thank you. This is Donna B. in Denver, Colorado. I, like Bill, when I completed my education, had a great future ahead of me. But what I found when I entered the real world is that I couldn't keep a job. I had this prestigious degree, graduated top of my class, but being a student didn't conflict as much as my disease as having to get up and show up for work. I think the bosses that fired me were confounded. I don't think any of them would have pointed to addiction as the source or the root cause of my inability to perform at work. They probably would have used words like crazy, unpredictable, mood swings, irritability, inability to get along with others. I just don't think addiction would have even crossed their minds. Even while my weight fluctuated over the period of time that a specific employer may have known me, which even that may have been unnoticeable because I was unable to keep a job longer than a year. For me, it really was my inability to keep work that brought me to my very first bottom, that brought me into the rooms of OA. I think like my employers, I was just as confused as to why I could, when alone in my cubicle, do really complex math problems, but the minute I walked out of my cubicle, could do nothing but create chaos in the workplace. As a person who lives with addiction and with mental illness, I do my part where I feel safe and comfortable to alleviate the stigma. I don't do it perfectly because I live in fear of having that stigma directed at me and being judged. But where I feel safe and where I feel comfortable, I do consider it a part of my service to share what addiction is, what mental illness is, how it shows up, and that it is possible that despite being an addict, I can be a good employee, I can be a good employer, I really can show up in the world in a meaningful way. And I'm just so grateful for this program and for the people that I have the opportunity to work with, both as a sponsor and as a fellow. Thanks for trudging this road with me. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Donna B. Jan B., you're next. Julie E.B., you'll follow Jan. Good morning, Jan.
Good morning. Good morning. This is Jan B. in Colorado. And I'm in recovery today. Thank you so much. Thank you, God. Thank you for all the people that put this meeting together. And I'd like to focus my comments on the sentence in the first paragraph on 142. Next, he can be assured that you do not intend to lecture, moralize, or condemn. That if this was done formally, that it was because of a misunderstanding. If possible, express a lack of hard feeling toward him. And I can really relate to this because I have used this in instances outside of recovery. I'm thinking of a family member desperately needing my help for legal counsel to help them get an attorney and work through some issues. And there was so much shame and so much just demoralizing feelings that the person just wasn't addressing the issues. And I happened in this one instance, this is not my normal MO, but in this instance, I just said, you know, I don't really care about that. I just want to help. Bottom line, I just want to help. And it was a miracle that, you know, we got through that. And so when I'm reading this today, I'm thinking, what a neat tool in the toolbox to set aside the lecture with the moralization, you know, condemnation, you know, how did you get in this state? I mean, all of those things, it doesn't matter. What matters is that they're choosing to be different now, that I have made the choices in recovery to choose to move beyond this. And that's what we really want to focus on. So what a beautiful tool. And I think it's so wonderful when you find the person that is really ready. It was a beautiful moment when I was really ready. It's the steps that lead to that always leads to the steps to do, you know, are always the steps that lead to that fantastic moment of spiritual awakening and the realization that it's just time to set it aside. And I think it's so wonderful to be able to help other people on the path. So anyway, thank you so much for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Jan B. Julie E. B., it's your time. And then Pia, you'll follow Julie.
Hi, this is Julie E.B., compulsive over and under eater in Colorado. I feel really touched by this section. It just makes me imagine what it was like for folks back then who had the solution and now had a desire to spread the solution into not only the lives of the addict like me, but into the lives of their spouses and their families and their employers. And I think this is amazing that they're just laying out a course for an employer to try to make a caring impact. I do think that this kind of appeal works best if it's done by someone in whom the problem has been solved. So that kind of flips me over to just be grateful that as a problem has been solved and is being solved in every corner of my life, I have an opportunity to do service in all sorts of places that I never expected. Maybe with those who are working in some way under me, maybe with those I'm working next to, and maybe those I'm working with. And I have the blessing of a job where I encounter people every day who are literally dying of addiction. And many folks that I encounter are sick and ill with other things. But many of the folks that I have witnessed, stood at the bedside and talked to people as they are dying of the effects of this illness, and awash in the shame of this illness. And to be able to share with them that I, too, have been in that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body is such a privilege. And they look at me so strangely, and they're so surprised that I can relate, that it just makes me open to whatever kinds of opportunities that I might have on a daily basis to do service. These folks were on fire, and not just on fire like I was in the beginning for my own recovery, but as I'm on fire for service, as I'm on fire for every person still suffering in this disease that's listening today, I just want to connect. And if my story and experience can make a difference, just please reach out. Thanks for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Julie E.B. Pia S., it's your turn on the line, and then Liz T. will follow you.
Thank you, Melanie. This is Pia S. Can you hear me?
I can.
Thank you. Oh, boy. This this chapter talks about, you know, how to approach an alcoholic or a compulsive overeater as an employer. I'm not an employer now, and I'm not an employee, but I can speak as a recovered compulsive overeater about how I can approach someone that is struggling. And now what stood out to me today is where it talks about really take every necessary step, submit to anything to get well, to stop drinking forever. If he says yes, does he really mean it, or down inside does he think he's fooling you, and that after rest and treatment, he will be able to get away with a few drinks now and then? I've been on a lot of diets, like this rigid eating plan, and when I started eating again, I didn't know that I had an allergy, an abnormal reaction to certain substances. So when I started eating sugar again, my body started craving it again. So then I learned that I also have an obsession of the mind. So even though my body is not triggered by sugar at that point, my brain can't handle my feelings and thoughts. So the only solution that I have is to eat. I need something to calm all the chatter that I have in my head. And my experience is that the allergy is cured by total abstinence from sugars, certain fats and foods that make me want to eat more food. And then the obsession of my mind is cured by working the steps. And as a result of working the steps, my experience is that my personality was changed. And I now get an access to a higher power, a higher level of knowledge that directs my thoughts, attitudes, and actions so I don't hurt myself or others anymore. I become more effective. And for me, the only problem with this way of living is that I have to do it every day and that I will never be perfect at it, even though I do it every day. But the beauty of this way of living is that I only have to do it today and that I'm allowed to make mistakes. And I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful for this program and for this meeting. I appreciate you so much, Melanie. Thank you for letting me share. And I'll pass.
Thank you, Pia S. Liz T., you're next, and then Ida will follow you.
Hi, good morning. My name is Liz T. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Minnesota. And just paging through this, just on page 141 alone, in the two paragraphs, the three on that page that we read, I circled the word want three times. There are many men and women who want to stop. If he wants to quit drinking and you want to help him, even be only a matter of good business, you now know more about alcoholism. What do I know about it? I know I have an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind. Once the food is down, I cannot reasonably predict how long I can keep it down on my own willpower, which for me is not very long. A few days, maybe a couple weeks at the most, white-knuckled abstinence. And I got tired of that kind of existence, and I was white-knuckling life. I was irritable, restless, discontented. I wasn't of much use to other people. I was very self-absorbed, all about me. I thought I was really effective in the world, that I was really caring, but it was more from a victim and a martyrdom standpoint than anything, a victim of my circumstances. And today I'm seeing more and more how that affected my life, and no wonder I was miserable. If I'm basing my happiness out of rest satisfaction out of this world for my happiness, I'm going to be pretty miserable because, you know, change is inevitable. I can have my little schemes and designs and think that's how I want my day to go, but if I'm living on God's terms, there's going to be, you know, unexpected things that happen, and it's my reaction to that. And I've noticed with my spiritual awakening that, thank you, God, I'm becoming less reactive and less of a victim, and that's a direct relation, a direct result from working these steps. You know, I do come across a lot of people who want to quit eating compulsively, but I don't come across a whole lot that want to do the work, you know. It's kind of like the special edition we had recently, Let Go or Be Dragged. I can't drag anybody. Nobody could drag me. Step zero and step one had to be conceding to my innermost self that I am a real compulsive overeater, and no power within me by myself is going to restore me to sanity. And then I saw you guys recovering and recovered, and then I came to believe in step two that it could be possible for me. So it's kind of like, you know, I could try to explain this, explain, but to understand something, it comes from experience in someone whom the problem has been solved, that message of depth and weight. I needed a message from a recovered sponsor that had depth and weight. I could keep talking to my dieting buddies about it. What do you guys think about abstinence? Do you think I can still drink alcohol? Am I going to get a clear-cut answer and a clear-cut instruction from still, you know, contemplating with my dieting buddies, you know? So, I'm grateful to be here today, and thanks for listening. I'll pass.
Thank you, Liz T. Ida A is going to come up next here, but I want to let you know, since we're going to open it up again, that we're on page 141 in the big book, chapter 2, Employers, starting with paragraph 2, but there are many men who want to stop. I'm going to read through 5 paragraphs and comment our experience on those 5 paragraphs. Ida, good morning to you. It's your turn, then we'll open up again.
Hi, good morning, Melanie, and good morning, everybody, and thank you all for the part that you have played in my in this program, in my growing recovery, and in the scales of deception that are falling off of me. I really can't thank you enough, because every time I get on one of these lines, parts of the big book come alive. And so I spent years being an employee, some years being an employer, but today I really, really, really am not scamming the system. And I have felt like it was my job to show up, no matter how gravely ill, and pretend I wasn't, and tell you what you wanted to hear. And today I don't have to do that. Today I feel like I have a chance to grab at the brass ring and be rigorously honest and work the program, and I really mean it. And that involves surrender, and I swore I would die before I surrendered. And now I really get that whole piece about whatever the quality of my recovery is, it will absolutely be proportional to the quality of my surrender. And I cannot keep drugged and warped like I was for decades and expect God to show up and expect all of you to be in my life. And so what I see is, yes, this is about all the people we work with, but I don't need to focus on them today. Today, and just for today, I need to focus on what's the next right step and follow direction. And I historically haven't done that well. But that's okay, because I have a program and I have these steps, and I can keep it simple if I listen to you and if I follow the big book. And gosh, I have hope today. And so thank you all. I don't have to deceive myself anymore. And I really mean it today. It doesn't matter what the past decades have been. I can move forward because I have all of you, and this toxic stagnation, it doesn't have to be there. So thank you. Bless you. Have a great day. I'm done.
Thank you, Ida A. Yep, we're discussing the guidelines in the big book this morning on page 141, paragraph 2 through 5 paragraphs. Anyone else want to comment on those 5 paragraphs today?
Suzanne B.
Hi, Suzanne.
Yes, this is
Wendy
Ann. Melissa.
Hi, Melissa. And I got you. I got you, and I got Wendy, too. Jordan L.
Cindy D.
Reggie O.
Jordan and Cindy. And
Andrea
Reggie.
F.
I'm sorry, what was the last one?
Andrea S.
Andrea S. We'll see how we get with all those names with the time, but we'll hopefully get to everyone. So what I have is Suzanne B., Melissa, Wendy, Jordan, Cindy, Reggie, and Andrea. Good morning, Suzanne.
Hi, Melanie. Thank you so much. I think these are really great paragraphs for an employer, but also for me as a sponsor. When somebody's asking me to go through the steps, there's a lot of information in these paragraphs in terms of questions that I can ask, how I can speak to somebody, how I can explain things. And what I think I'm really looking for is how serious that person is. And if I am a new sponsor, if it's the first time that I'm taking somebody through the work, what I can do with this chapter and also with the chapter working with others is take notes. So I have a cheat sheet for assistance. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Suzanne B. Melissa, you're up next.
Thank you, Melanie. It's Melissa H. from Tennessee. These paragraphs speak to me on two levels. One, I used to be an employer, and the way that I handled things was more just by letting people know I was in recovery. And I've had a couple people approach me asking information, and I gave information, and I never pushed. Because I know that when people push me, that doesn't work. And the second way that I really related to what was read is I've got a distant family member that has posted some things on social media that they're really struggling. And I just offer privately that if they want to ever go to a meeting with me, I'd be happy to meet them there or take them. And there's a part of me that wants to push there, and that doesn't work. So I guess maybe the overall message to me in these paragraphs is about trying to work my program and going back to the traditions about, you know, we're not advertising, but basically we try to live the program to the best of our ability in all areas. So thank you all, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Melissa H. Wendy M., you're next. Star one, please.
Yes, good morning. This is Wendy M., recovered gratefully in Boulder, Colorado. Mel, thanks so much for your service. Everybody on the line. So the first line I want to talk about is a firm attitude at this point has helped many of us. So here's the deal. A firm attitude to me is interrupting the disease. So in the beginning, I called many, many people. When the food was down, life was up. And they would lovingly point out that my head was totally in the disease. They would say, Wendy, you're nuts right now. And it's not you, it's your disease. And it's got you by the whatevers. And that firm attitude, that honesty, that willingness as a sponsor, as a fellow, it doesn't really matter, is so important in terms of interrupting the disease, identifying the disease and interrupting it. And it's not personal. When I talk to my sponsees and I say, you know what, you actually, the disease has got you right now. It's so helpful and it's so freeing, right? So just that willingness that me to be perfectly honest, 110% honest with me, so that I'm not swimming in the disease and I'm not swimming in my own deception. And then the next thing I want to say is, how willing am I to stop? So I was willing to put the food down 2.5 years ago, and I got, you know, neutrality within a couple of days. And for some reason, God has graced me with this. And as I say many times on the line, the food is down and life is up, right? So what am I using today? So I'm trying to get an effect through using people, right? And the question I have for myself is, am I really willing to stop using people? Am I really willing to put down this behavior? And the good news is I'm seeing it more and more and more, right? And I'm on to myself more and more. I'm beginning to see that when I pick up instead of picking up the potato chips, I'm picking up resentment, I'm picking up blaming, I'm picking up, you know, it's the same thing, right? And I'm binging on these emotions. I'm binging because I want an effect. Why? Because I want you to take care of me. I want you to take responsibility for my life. And the amazing thing is, you know, the more I work this program, God is just like screaming at this point saying to me, you know what? You can take responsibility for your life. You can actually be entirely abstinent. You can be sober with other human beings. You no longer have to use other people to get an effect. You don't have to do it. And I'm like, are you sure, God? And God's like, oh, absolutely. Yes, you're ready to put this down. You're absolutely ready to put it down. And you know, when I slip, when I say something to somebody and it's really sarcastic, or my motive is to get them to take care of me, or I'm in self-pity, I feel it immediately, right? It's that itchy, scratchy feeling of like, oh, I did it again. I'm in self. So the question is, you know, am I willing to stop using people today? And I'm absolutely willing to, because you know why? It feels awful to use people. It's just like being in the food. It's a big fat binge. And it feels icky, wicky, awful. And God makes it feel awful so that God gets my attention so that I can take responsibility for my life. Not just the food, but everything else. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Wendy M. Jordan L., you're next, and then Cindy, you come up after, and I didn't catch Cindy's first initial of her last name, but we'll get that. Good morning, Jordan. Star one, please.
Here you are.
Good morning. Good morning, Mel. Can you hear me?
I can. Yeah, I can.
Okay, cool. My name's Jordan L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado. the last part of that second to last paragraph and that last paragraph is really what hit me this morning. especially this idea of being warped and drugged. Because I think that a lot of times compulsive overeaters, like when we're in the disease, it's even easier to say that it's not that bad, you know. In my opinion, it's even easier to say that more so than an alcoholic or a drug addict, because unmanageability is so much more blaring, I think, in those situations. Whereas when it comes to compulsive overeating, it's almost more subtle and insidious than those like blaring examples, you know? and this idea of really wanting to quit, like truly having an honest desire not to compulsively overeat anymore, conceding. For me, it was conceding to myself the effect that the food was having on me, realizing that in putting down the food, I was putting down the seeking of that effect, and that it was going to be painful and hard and vulnerable and raw and like not a pretty picture at all, in my opinion. You know, some people have different views about abstinence, but mine was not pretty. It was me like unleashed completely and totally, you know. And there was lots of crying every day for my first year. But going down to that next paragraph then, and sort of the next part of that, the steps 2 and 3, this idea of I'm putting down the food, now I'm going to also put down the idea that I know what's best, that I'm in charge of my destiny and I should be making these decisions about my life and this and that, and like really, really being willing to put all that stuff down, abandon myself to the idea of like, I'll do, I'll go, I'll be whatever it is that God would have me be, in whatever situation. kind of dealing, wheeling and dealing, as long as I stay abstinent, you know, because that's important.
Time.
And then as I get further, it's like, oh, wow, this living in God's will thing is amazing. I want to keep doing it. So anyway, I just wanted to share that this morning. Thanks for listening.
Thanks so much, Jordan L. So I'm looking for Cindy, maybe Cindy D, if memory serves.
Hi, Melanie. It's Cindy D from Texas.
Oh, hi, Cindy D. Welcome. It's your turn on the line, madam.
Hi, this is Cindy D from Texas, recovered. The sentence that caught me today was, will he take every necessary step, submit to anything to get well, to stop drinking or overeating forever? And I think back, you know, so many times in my life, I wanted to quit eating because I wanted to lose weight. And it wasn't until I became, until I came to the program and started really working the steps, especially when I got to my step 4 and step 9, where I started to realize that being well didn't mean having just a healthy body. It meant being mentally and, most importantly, spiritually well. And once I realized that and I really worked the steps to the best of my ability, I started to experience that spiritual change in me. And now I want to be different and I want to be who God wants me to be. And I'm so grateful for the program for helping me to learn that and to see that before it was too late. And the second thing I wanted to comment on is I heard someone else share, and I just loved that, you know, being a new sponsor, you can use some of these paragraphs to build a cheat sheet as you work with your sponsees, because I'm just about to become a sponsor. And so I'm looking for all the ideas I can get of how to do that to the best of my ability as well. So that's what I wanted to share for today. Thanks for letting me have my turn, and I pass.
Thank you, Cindy D. So we have Reggie O that's up next. Reggie O, star 1, please. And I think we'll have time for Andrea, too.
Good morning, Melanie. Thanks so much for your service. It's really great to be here. This is Reggie. Thanks. In the greater Los Angeles area. These paragraphs and two employers have been so striking to me, touched me very deeply. And I was looking at myself on every level, you know, first as an employee, first as an employee. And I was just thinking about, you know, back over the years, all of the people that I would, in the work that I would do, the number of people that I was in front of, you know, every day. And my disease kept me from really doing, you know, doing what I could possibly have done to, you know, make a difference. I did make a difference in people's lives, but what I could have done had I not been in this disease was really amazing. And I know I cost my employers, you know, time too. I would take days off and that I didn't really need to, or, you know, and I would sometimes steal, you know, things from my offices, thinking it was just perfectly reasonable. And the next thing I thought of was being once in an intimate relationship, and I was in such pain. My disease had me in such pain. I was in such pain around it, but not all the time. It would only come to me in moments. You know, the rest of the time I would just be in the crazy disease. And I had this deep desire that my partner would say, "You have to stop this, or it's done. I'm over." Because I knew I needed something of that. That order to wake me up. And it never happened, but I remember having that desire that I would be told that. And the other thing I just really love here, you know, is like being on the other side, whether it's as an employee or an employer or a sponsor, is that, you know, that pushing, demanding, you know, that's not ever my job, but that firm attitude that's in here and that people have talked about, where there's this entire honesty, and I sent this entire honesty and caring. It comes from a place of caring and respect and treating another human being with dignity, you know, while saying the truth. And it's really striking me too, again, you know, is this person really ready to do whatever it takes for that recovery? Are they in that place? And I think it's probably likely that if they are, that it will all come to good effect. And if they're not, it might not be the right time. I'm not God. I don't know that, but I am there to be of service. So really grateful to be doing this to employers. Very, very powerful. And thanks.
Thanks, Reggie O. And Andrea S., there is time for you to share this morning. Want to take us to the end of the meeting, please? Recorded hour anyway. Star 1, Andrea. And everyone else, please press star 1 to mute.
Hi, this is Andrea S. from Arizona. I love these paragraphs. They do make it sound like it's fairly cut and dry. If you ask the right questions in the right way and someone passes a litmus test by saying, you know, you're convinced that they really do want to stop. And I know for me, it has never been cut and dry, that these paragraphs remind me of the revolving door of this disease. I've been the employer where I've had people that absolutely wanted to, you know, to stop. And for me, I can say that when someone is asking me that question about my own disease, yes, I want to stop compulsive eating. And yet there's this other part of me called denial, called minimalization, that will come back at any time and say, oh, no, 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 I want this. And I discovered that many times. People, I was the director of a treatment program for alcoholics. Everybody wants to stop when they get in, but do the work, and that's the bottom line question. And for me, as a recovering person and as a sponsor, to say yes, I want to stop eating, and to be willing to do the work are two entirely different things. So the hardest challenge for me has been to stay aware of where I am with my own disease, and to be completely compassionate and honest about being able to point out when someone else's disease is talking for them. because our disease can come back and knock us up the side of the head and take over our thoughts and our words and everything else just in a heartbeat. And when someone can lovingly say to me, Andrea, this is your disease talking, this isn't really you. And then when I, as a sponsor, have to say, well, this person may want to be abstinent, but right now at this moment they are choosing not to do the work. What I need to know is, how is that impacting my program today? Can I continue to sponsor someone who may be making choices that demonstrate the disease has the upper hand right now? So it's a very, very, very slippery revolving door for me to stay aware of where I am in any moment, how I can lovingly communicate and be of service, how I can help someone else recognize when their disease has the upper hand, and it's okay if they choose not to be in recovery right now. That is their choice. Okay, I'll stop there. Andrea S. from Arizona.
Thank you very much, Andrea S. And that concludes the recorded portion of our meeting. As we close this out, please stay with us after you finish the Serenity Prayer, because we want to do a few more things before we let you all go, joining together. But in the meantime, thank you for all those that shared today and for this fabulous, really good meeting. And I'd like to ask Pia S. to please read. Our book is meant to be suggestive only, on page 164.
Yes. This is Pia S., grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Parkland, Florida. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you